Hello there, boys and girls, and welcome to another episode of Circling the Bases, proudly a part of NBC Sports Edge. I'm your host, as always, Colin Henderson. Joining me today, Mr. Christopher Crawford. Chris, we have had some of our first awards handed out in the baseball season. We got Golden Gloves. I really hope you were a Cardinal, because if you were, you probably got a Golden Glove. And we just had Bryce Harper and Vlad Jr. both getting respective AL and NL best offensive players in the league. So we're starting to get into the offseason hardware.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, the Gold Gloves are probably the most meaningless award outside of the ones that don't air on NBC. All of those ones are very good. But it's, ever since Rafael Palmeiro won a Gold Glove playing like 16 games at first base, I have decided that that award just isn't for me. But, you know, if I won one, I sure would be. I was proud of my son, Brandon Crawford, for winning one. And, I'm interested in seeing Vladimir Guerrero win that AL Offensive Player of the Year. I still think that Shohei Ohtani is a massive favorite to end up with that MVP award. But good for Vladdy Jr., a player that a lot of players had a lot of doubts about. And good for Bryce Harper, a guy who became so overrated, he became somehow underrated. It's cool to see both of those guys taking home hardware.
Yeah, I agree with you there. One, first off, great to see both of them having, getting some hardware and getting the recognition that both of their excellent seasons deserved.
Sure.
But two, I'm with you on the fact that Ohtani is still going to win MVP. If I had my paycheck, I'm putting it on Ohtani to win it. It would blow my mind if he didn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in the National League, I will say, while my personal money would be on Soto because of just how great of a season he is,
is
very much a conversation that Bryce Harper ends up winning that thing.
Yeah.
And last time I checked, Bryce Harper was in positive money on betting sites to try and get the NL MVP. I'm not saying that I'm encouraging people to rush out there and throw money behind, but
no.
Does him winning the NL Offensive Player of the Year, does that mean something in the MVP voting? Or is this that classic, congratulations, you get to be AFC Offensive Player of the Year because you were a wide receiver, and we're going to give the quarterback the MVP. I'm not sure which one that falls on here.
Yeah.
But if you did have any money on Bryce Harper to win National League MVP, you might feel a little better about it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, too, none of those three guys winning would absolutely shock me. I could see – I will be absolutely stunned if anyone but Shohei Ohtani comes home with the AL MVP award. But if Fernando Tatis Jr., I think, is third in this thing. But if he won, would I be shocked? No, because I could see, because of the way the BBWAA works, some of those guys getting some weird downplaced votes. Fernando Tatis Jr. is the one guy that it's impossible to leave him off the top three. You know what I mean? Juan Soto.
Austin Riley people out there might argue against that, but yes.
For sure. Austin Riley belongs in that conversation as well, for sure. But wait, what I'm saying, though, is for those three finalists, there could be some guys in the BBWAA who say, Juan Soto was on a fourth place team. Why does he get MVP votes? Or
although by that logic, why am I giving MVP votes to
Bryce Harper?
Fernando Tatis, all three of those guys.
Yeah.
Let's be real about this. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about MVP, my team is not supposed to tank at the end of the season and go from sure-fired wild card to not even in the playoff conversation.
I mean, there's only one guy here who had played on a team with a winning record, which is so weird to see for MVP. Shohei Ohtani's going to run away with this thing on a team that was non-competitive after June. So it's the times, they are a-changing.
It's possible we might have two MVPs this year with losing records at the end of it.
Absolutely.
Because Soto could potentially win it. So
absolutely,
that's pretty nuts. Coming up on the show today, though, will be more than just some hardware talk. Chris and I are going to be playing a little game of over-under with each impending free agent from this year's free agent class, as we predict their statistical performances going into next year. But first, before we get to all of those, two things. One, the NFL season is in full swing, and the NBC Sports Predictor app has you covered with Sunday Night 7. Predict what will happen between the Chiefs and Raiders on Sunday night for a chance to win up to $100,000. It's free and easy to play. So download today from your app store or visit nbcsports.com/predictor to play. And the second thing that we need to bring up first is we have our first early offseason signing, or at least one of any type of note. Yeah. Granted, this guy did not make a postseason roster when he was on playing just a couple months or just a couple weeks ago. But Andrew Heaney is now officially a Los Angeles Dodger, signing a very short, small contract, essentially a prove it if you want to get back into the starting rotation kind of contract. Looked at it as, but Dodgers quick to make a move here, quick to add a lefty arm that can either eat some innings at the start of the game, you know, at the start, or can provide long relief.
Yeah, I like this signing for him, for the Dodgers. It's kind of like what we're going to see from what we were hoping when Danny Duffy was expected to be activated off the injured list, to be kind of that type of pitcher. I mean, this is a guy, look, ERA of 5.83, but he struck out 150 batters in 128 and two-thirds innings. The Yankees made a huge mistake in that deal in assuming that Andrew Heaney's stuff was going to play in that park. And it's one of the reasons why Matthew Boyd wouldn't have made sense for that type of team either. He's just too homer prone. And that short porch, and it's not really a jet stream anymore, but the ball does fly out to right field in that ballpark. And it was just not a great fit for him. Dodger Stadium is a much better fit. But I think the bigger thing here is, I mean, that signing, and it's again reported, is very quick. And I think we might see a bunch of these. I think we might see these kind of mid-tier free agents coming to deals fairly early because they want nothing to do with that CBA. Because if Andrew Heaney doesn't sign on November 7th or whatever day that was announced, he may not be signing until March 7th because there is just so much in the air right now that I think these mid-tier free agents, and I think Andrew Heaney respectfully falls into that, are going to be quicker to sign than maybe we've seen in the past.
Truthfully, mid-tier is optimistic on your end. I mean, I'm not even sure if we could. I mean, Andrew Heaney, the way that he's been both hyped up and failed to live up to that hype over the last five years almost negates that. But I mean, look, if you're gonna reclaim your career, do it with the Dodgers. It seems to be working out for anybody who pulls up into that bullpen. I completely agree with you, though. I think the upcoming CBA talks are such a gigantic gorilla in the room that it is, if you are someone who is remotely interested in job security, that is not 100% sure that when all the chips fall at the end of the CBA, that there's absolutely a roster spot waiting for you there. Like the big, like most of the big top free agents that we're going to talk about today, none of them are probably going to sign. Maybe one or two of them signed before the CBA. Maybe.
Right.
But for the most part, they're going to wait it out because they know someone will eventually pay them at the end of the day. The Andrew Heaneys of the world and those, like, they don't know what they're walking into come a couple weeks from now in terms of what the cold market and CBA conversations are going to be. So I agree with you. I think we could see a couple of these, you know, older guys, the like the Brett Gardners of the worlds out there who are just like, look, I want someone to guarantee major league roster, and I am willing to pay 1 year of whatever I need to say that I'm going to be at least on the roster theoretically starting next year. And that's all they are in the market for. We'll see a couple of those guys sign. The younger players and the bigger name free agents, I mean, get ready to kick up your feet because we're going to be sitting here probably 4 months from now still wondering where a couple of them are going
to
sign.
Yeah, you got to be patient with those guys. And it's going to stink for some guys who are, you know, playing in keeper leagues and dynasty leagues. You just are not going to find out where players like Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, those guys are playing until pretty close to draft day. I mean, there's a very good chance of that, barring somebody going crazy. By the way, it is interesting that Andrew Heaney is returning to an organization that he was in for about 15 minutes previously. He was with the Dodgers before and then was traded in the D. Gordon trade and had a very funny tweet about at the time of the trade about how much he loved his teammates and leaving the organization. So that was a nice little throwback to one of the better organizational tweets, not involving the Seattle Mariners, who trade guys every 8 minutes.
Isn't that nice when a front office goes back and brings home the hometown boy?
He's coming home.
Play
Play the Dirty Muddy song. He's coming home.
All right, so let's get to some of this over-under talk. So what we have decided, instead of just talking about free agents, which everyone's doing right now, and unfortunately because of the CBA and all the rest, we're probably going to be doing for the next 3-4 months. We thought it'd be fun to kind of tackle this in a slightly different way. So what we did was we essentially picked a statistical or humorous over under for every, you know, basically the top 20 free agents. And we're, and Chris and I are going to debate whether we are, whether we think we, the number is far too low or far too high. And let's start with Corey Seager, probably the 1A to Carlos Correa's 1B of top free agents available out there, however you fall on that spectrum. But let's start with Corey Seager, shortstop, 27 years old. Chris, my over-under for you, over-under 26.5 home runs for Corey Seager in 2022.
I'm going to go over. I'm not going to say a lot over. I'm going to say he's a 30-homer guy next year. Part of it is because I really do think he's going to the Yankees. I think that's such a good fit. So I do think that there'll be some friendly confines, a few, if you go to the Wood It Dong, a few homers, that'll be one or two. This is not an elite power hitter, but I certainly think 25 to 30 homers is realistic. And I'll guess that he gets that 30 homers this year.
So it's a big deal. When we look at, I tried to pick a lot of these over under numbers based on what is the thing that if they do this well or do this poorly will really affect their draft spot. And Corey Seager, one of the big things about him was just always like, can we get 30 home runs? Like, can we lock that in? His career high is 26 back in 2016.
Right.
And he hit 16 home runs this year. Granted, he only played in 95 games due to injury. So pretty decent home run per nine this year, considering that he only played in 95 games.
Right.
I agree with you. I'm over 26.5 as well. I think whether he goes to the Yankees, great. Whether he goes to a lot of other parks that have better right field porches, like I think that helps quite a bit. Mm-hmm. He will not have the lineup protection he theoretically will have if he goes to a lot of other teams, not all of them. Obviously Yankees would be one that would give him that, but I'm just curious where he falls on that. But I think the way that he's been kind of changing his swing a little bit more and more, I think he's trying to turn himself into a little bit more of a power hitter. Give me over 27 next year in the home run category.
And then real quick on that, like we talked about this in 2019, he hit 44 doubles that year he came back from Tommy John surgery. And we talked about how those will turn into the homers the next year. He was on a 40 homer pace in 2020, but he only got to play in 52 games. And you mentioned the 16. So yeah, the power is definitely on the uptick. He's a really good offensive player.
Yeah. And then, and obviously zooming out a little bit further, a theoretical move to third base, I think only helps that cause a little bit when he's not moving quite as much at the shortstop spot.
Sure.
All right, let's talk. Let's go to 1A to 1B. Carlos Correa, also a 27-year-old shortstop, hitting the free agent market for the first time in his career. My over-under for him, I'm going to skip the statistical ones because we have plenty of them. Just straight up over-under Corey Seager's contract.
This is such a tough one. And I said when we were talking about this last week in our podcast that I thought Corey Seager was going to get the best contract because I think the Yankees – have to have him maybe too strong, but he's just such a good fit. But because of Carlos Correa's defense, and let's just be honest, Carlos Correa is a much better defensive player than Corey Seager and is much more likely to stick at shortstop. I'm going to say that Correa gets it. I don't think it'll be by a lot, but I'm guessing that Correa is in that $30 to $35 million range where I'm guessing Seager's 25 to 30. I mean, when this guy is fully healthy,
I think it's closer. Okay.
I think when he's healthy, when Carlos Correa is healthy, he's basically a 7-win player, and a 7-win player who is a lock to stick at shortstop for the next 5 years. Whereas Corey Seager is a guy I don't even necessarily want as my third baseman next, or as my shortstop next year. That's a big difference, and I do think that that opens up the market a little bit more for him. So I'm going to guess that Carlos Correa ends up with the highest AAV.
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm agreeing with you for different reasons. So I agree. Correa is over Corey Seager's contract. And I think part of the reason why for me that I'm saying over is because I think Correa wants it more. I think Correa is out there with a grind, you know, with an axe to grind out there. He looked at what Francisco Lindor just got from the Mets, $340 million essentially.
Right.
And he's looking at that saying, I'm 27 years old. I've been the face of the Astros, gone to 5 straight ALCS. I've put together, you know, a World Series performance. I'm one of the most clutch postseason hitters of the last decade. Mm-hmm. And I'm setting this up. And I think also on top of that, I don't think he's highly motivated by like need to go to a right now contender where maybe he might take a little bit of a discount to say, go to, you know, maybe re-sign, well, not re-sign with the Astros, but, you know, if the Dodgers offered him something, if something else offered, like, okay, maybe I'd take a little bit less money to go play with a team that I really wanted to. I think if the Tigers opened up the checkbook and say, sure, here's $350 million, he signs with Detroit tomorrow. Right. So I think for that reason, I think Correa over Corey Seager on the contract side.
I mean, that's an interesting perspective of it. I can see that too. Like, he, look, this is a guy who does have a world championship. Mm-hmm. So does Corey Seager. Corey Seager also is going to get the ability for the first time to be a face of a franchise. And Carlos Correa really, he was the face, I think, of the franchise this year, not counting the fact that Jose Altuve is the face of the franchise, just because everyone hates the dude right now. I mean, mm-hmm, that is the heel turn type of thing. And Carlos Correa has some of that too. But I think the Tigers, I mean, that's a great point. Like, if you're Detroit, you can, like, just make such a big statement to say, we are going to give this guy $10,350. Everybody involved in Detroit is going to be just fine if they, yeah, do that, even if Carlos Correa doesn't end up being quite, and I'm doing the quotation marks, worth it, because he'll probably be worth like $40 or $50 million some years. That's an interesting point. I'll be very interested to see, and I'll also be very interested to see what he's looking at year-like, because there's reports of $5,160 being offered by Houston, and it's basically being reported that that's not even close.
It's not going to be a conversation.
And that's a lot of money. 32 AAV and a 5-year deal, which would allow him to hit free agency as a 32-year-old, not even really being, mm-hmm, something that he's discussing right now, tells you that Carlos Correa is about to get paid.
Yeah, he's expecting the tops. And you know what? That Lindor 340, that's what he's aiming for. And it'll be up to whatever team can get closest to that is going to have him. By the way, the Tigers also mentioned that AJ Hinch, his former manager for the Astros there, seems like a really nice spot for him to potentially land.
Great point.
Let's talk Chris Bryant, the third baseman outfielder, obviously was a Cub at the start of the 2020 season or 2021 season and ended up a Giant. He is a free agent now. Let's talk about one of the surprising stats that he pulled out this year, and that's stolen bases. He had 10 stolen bases in 2021. But only 6 total stolen bases in the prior 3 years, has averaged just over 5 stolen bases a season. So, Chris, I ask you, over under 6.5 stolen bases for Chris Bryant next year.
Boy, this is a one that would really depend on where he lands. Like, I hear a lot of talk about Chris Bryant potentially landing in Seattle. If he lands in Seattle, I would go under that stolen base total. If he lands on a National League team, and some of this will depend on if there's a designated hitter, of course, and this would allow him more of a chance to play every day too, then maybe that's an over. But just based on history, like, he had 13 stolen bases his rookie year. He's not a good stolen base guy. Like, he was 10 of 12 this year, but in his career, 44 for 64 is not good. I'll just go ahead and take the under because it's the safest thing to do.
Yeah, it's under for me, but I think the way that we're starting to see players even of his caliber and his speed, yeah, starting to move a little bit more on the base pass. Sure. We're starting to, yeah, see that a little bit more around, especially as contact is down and managers are just trying to make things happen on the base pass. So I'm going to say under, but I think it's like 6. Like, I think this is right, yeah, around the spot where, sure, I have it. Chris Bryant, like I said, 6 total in the prior 3 years, but 12 stolen base attempts last year. Now, granted, the Giants moved quite a bit and that, mm-hmm, helped, but, sure, I think Bryant gets right around 6. And if so, that's a pretty nice spot for a guy that you're not really expecting anything from the stolen base spot.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Again, this is really, and this will be true for a few of these guys, including the next one that we're going to talk about, really going to be dependent on who they're playing for.
Right. And you know what? That's kind of part of the fun of this conversation.
Absolutely. Out,
like,
yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Let's, not only am I thinking about who they might go to, but also who they might not, like, what's a bad spot for them to land. This is almost more of a conversation about pure talent rather, sure, than circumstances, which I kind of find very interesting. And this is the perfect example, as we're going to get to him now. Trevor Story, the 29-year-old shortstop from the Rockies, will no longer be a Rocky at the end of this year, or entering next year.
Right.
He'll be leaving the friendly confines of Coors Field for the first time in his career. The question with him, obviously, is can he bring the power with him? He had 24 home runs this season. However, in 2018 and 2019, he hit 37 and 35 home runs, respectively. So, Chris, Trevor Story not being a Rocky, over under 30 and a half home runs.
This is so close. Like, because like you look at his like splits and, you know, everybody is better at home than they are away. Like that's sure. just the way they were. But as a road player last year, and let's be fair to him that this was the worst year of Trevor Story's career since his rookie year. Yeah. 203, 292, 426. Like a 426 slugging percentage on the road. And he played in exactly as many games away as he did his home. Had three less starts because he came off the bench for three of these games. I'm going to say under. I would say he's probably 23 to 27, so it's not way under. But a lot of this will depend, too, like if Corey Seager does, like, re-sign with the Dodgers, then maybe the Yankees turn their attention to Trevor Story. If Trevor Story's playing in New York, I think he's got a really good chance of that. If Trevor Story's playing in Seattle or for Detroit or someone like that, I have a real tough time seeing Texas. It's going to be really close. Texas, yeah. Like, still don't really know what kind of ballpark Texas is because they've been so bad these last couple of years, but it seems to be pretty not homer friendly so far. No. It's going to be really, really close, but I'll take the under.
I'm going to take the over, and the only reason why I think it's close, but I think this is more of what does baseball do with sticky substances on pitchers? Like, does that help him out in any way, shape, or form moving forward? And also, I just look at Nolan Arenado, where we kind of all said when he left Coors that there was going to be like this big kind of offensive drop-off and everything, and he had a great year this year by all metrics, and maybe not Coors Field, height of his prime, 32 and a buck 20 kind of conversation. But I mean, does Trevor Story, if he really wants to on a motivated team for the first time in a couple of years, get there? Like, I think he can. You're right though. It's going to be tough with where he ends up going, but give me like 32 home runs from Trevor Story in the first year of a major money contract.
That's fair. And I will say this, if he does get to like 30, 35 homers, I'll be very curious to see what type of average he's dealing with because he's probably swinging for the fences. And I just think like Nolan Arenado is just a better power hitter to me than Trevor Story. Like you look, I wanted to make sure and look at his road stats for his career. And again, everybody is much worse on the road normally than they are at home. So it's not completely fair, but 603 slugging at home to 442 on the road. And 442 isn't terrible. It's very hard to get to 30 home runs with that, but I'll be very curious to see, like you watch him in the home run derby. Like it's very clear that he has the power to do it, but I don't think that is such a tough one. I don't like you for doing that.
Yeah, well, you're going to not like a bunch of these, I'm sure. Yeah,
that's correct. I've already looked at
them. Because I tried very hard to make these as genuinely challenging as humanly possible. So let's go. Let's start with guy who has shown plenty of power from the shortstop spot. It's over 30 for me, for him. Marcus Semien. I mean, just we have, as a community, we have completely done a 180 on Marcus Semien over the last 3 years. It's astounding to see how he went from guy who was good to guy who is MVP caliber. And coming off of just a tremendous year this year in the top, in the final three, obviously a distant third in AL MVP voting. We don't know where the voting is, but he'll be a distant third. But the biggest question with Marcus Semien, we know the power is going to be there. And if the power is there, especially if he's on a good team, the RBI should be there. The run should be there. The question is, can the batting average live up to where it needs to be? He hit .265 in 2021, which is just slightly better than his career average of .256. He has only passed .250 twice since his rookie year, and that's in 2021 and 2019, respectively. Those were the last two full seasons. Those were also the last 2 years where he was top three in MVP voting. So I'll ask you, not knowing where he signs next year, over under Marcus Semien, a .260 batting average.
I'm going to go under. I think this is actually one of the easier ones for me. And it's with all due respect to Marcus Semien because he's still a terrific baseball player. But you just look at his career. He has 1 year since 2015 of an expected batting average in the 60th percentile. Like he just strikes out too much and he hits the ball in the air too much for him to be a high average guy. Like there was that exception where he was just, you know, whatting on the ball like crazy in 2019. But even that, His expecting batting average was only in the 60th percentile. He's going to get on base at a very high clip. He's going to hit for power. He's going to provide stolen bases. He's going to be an excellent defensive player at second base or a very solid shortstop. But I can't count on him to be more than a 245 to 250 hitter. I'll take the under there.
I'm going to take the under here as well. I want to say about 250 is about where I will pencil him in. It just it feels like he's selling out a little bit more and more on the power. And if we're talking about the two best statistical years that he's had in his entire career being 2019 and 2021, and he had 265 and 285 in those spans, and 285 was an aberration and it felt like one at the time.
Sure.
265 feels closer to right about like, hey, I'm having a good year. 265 is really good. Can he have this type of year again where, you know, top three AL MVP voting is incredibly difficult to do if your name is not Mike Trout. For everybody else in the league, it's got to be difficult for Marcus Semien as well. 250 feels about right for me. I'll take the under on that one as well.
Fair. Yeah. And again, Marcus Semien, really, really good players. Just don't count on that category.
No question. So speaking of somebody else who has batting average woes, let's talk about Javier Baez, the shortstop slash second baseman for the Cubs slash Mets in the 2021 season. For just a absolute darling to watch in real life and an absolute thorn in your side if you are even remotely into sabermetrics, because he is about the exact polar opposites of the two. Most exciting player on the field, also one of the more maddening. His on-base percentage has been not great for basically his entire career. This is a man who loves to swing. He is not a man who likes to walk. Nope. And so his strikeout totals are always towards the top. His walk totals are always towards the bottom. But if Javier Baez is going to get anywhere close to his near MVP season from about 3-4 years ago, it's going to have to be with him getting on base and making better contact a la a Tim Anderson rather than Javi Baez, who's striking out quite as much. So I ask you, with an OBP of 319 in 2021, a career OBP of 307, does it over under a 320 OBP in 2022.
Javi Baez, I love you, but I'm going way under. Like, there's a chance that if he's that rare player who is a good player who gets on base at like 290. It swings so much and he strikes out so much. He has never had a walk percentage above 5.9%. That is his high. Like, I can't see him changing his approach that much. Some of this, I think, honestly, would depend a little bit on lineup stuff. Like, lineup protection is something that the analytical people debate, like how much it truly helps. But there's no doubt in my mind that you are changed how you're pitched based on who the next hitter is. True. Like, if he has a guy who can hit behind him, you know, if he's with, if he signs with, let's say he signs
with the Mets and has, he signs, then-
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, I mean, the
Alonso,
question.
Alonso, Lindor. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's plenty of talent around that. Yeah,
plenty of talent around that. It's a little easier if he signs in Detroit and Jonathan Scope is behind him. You're probably being a little more aggressive with Javier Baez, and the more aggressive that you're going to be with him, the more aggressive he's going to be. I love you. You're one of the funnest defensive players I've ever watched in my entire life. But you are a very flawed player, Javi Baez, and I can't ever bet on you getting on base above 319. Just can't do it.
Under for me as well. He's only broken 320 twice in his career, and that just is kind of astounding to look at just the career that we associate with Javier Baez, and he's only broken 320 on base percentage twice, and that's 2015 and 2018. So until he shows a Robbie Ray-esque change in his, in his approach, like,
that's
it would
good
just
job.
Dang it. It would take it. I have to go under on that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Freddie Freeman here, the now current world champion, soon to be free agent, first baseman for the Braves. He has been just an absolute hitting machine, won MVP in the shortened 2020 season, is going to get down ballot votes this year as well. However, RBIs wise, he's only broken 100 RBIs twice in his career, which is kind of a shocking stat when I think of Freddie Freeman. He had 83 RBIs this regular season. So I ask you, as we go into next year, granted, I should emphasize he was on pace to surpass that 100 RBIs in the shortened 2020 season when he did win MVP. So theoretically, sure, would have been three seasons barring health.
Yeah.
Over under, Chris, 99.5 RBIs for Freddie Freeman in 2022.
So RBI is the hardest thing to predict, yep, because it, you're just basing it. But I'll say this. I like his chances a lot. And the reason I'll go over is because Freddie Freeman has hit second in that lineup a lot. And a lot of that time means that means he's only batting with one guy ahead of him. And it's because the ninth spot is the pitcher. But yep, if we have a designated hitter, and Atlanta's lineup should be very complete next year, assuming that everybody can stay healthy, I like his chances of driving in runs and maybe moving down to like that third spot more often. Like if you have Ronald mm-hmm. Acuna and Ozzie Albies and Freddie Freeman, and then if your ninth spot is not an automatic out, I like that chance a lot more. Again, I'm assuming that Freddie Freeman is going to resign in Atlanta. It's still weird to me that it didn't get done in the regular season, though. So it's just an odd thing. But I'll go over just because I think Freddie Freeman is kind of due for that like 115, 120 RBI season as well.
Yeah, he had 121 in 2019.
Nice.
But I'm with you. Honestly, this is one of the easier ones for me. I'm over on this. Again, adding Acuna back to that lineup, assuming that he goes back to Atlanta, like there's every, and like you mentioned, the DH in the ninth, and for who's batting ninth in that spot.
Absolutely.
Like, all of that should just line up drastically for him to crush 100 RBIs if that's where this lines up. But you know what? Even if I hedge my bet and he ends up going to a Phillies, to a Boston, to a Milwaukee, like I think all of those spots.
Oh, Milwaukee's such a good fit. I'd never thought of that. That's such a good fit. Now, I don't know if they, man, I'm going to be thinking about that for like the next 3 days. Milwaukee would be such a good fit for Freddie.
They had the dollar figures to do it. Like it would make perfect sense. So,
absolutely.
But if he were to fall into any of those spots, I'd still might take the over on 100%. RBIs. And that makes me feel pretty good about that. So give me the over there.
Good call.
Let's talk about Starling Marte. Maybe one of the outside of the, in the non-Max Scherzer tier of best mid-season trades acquisitions. Mm-hmm. Starling Marte just looked excellent this entire year. He led the majors in stolen bases last year with 47. He's broken 40 stolen bases, the 40 stolen base mark twice before the season. His last time was in 2016. However, he will be 33 years old entering this year and will turn 34 somewhere between it. We don't know where he lands, but if you're drafting him, you're drafting him for stolen bases. Chris, over under 39.5 stolen bases for Starling Marte.
I'm going to go under. It's just such a high number for me. Like, I do think that he's got a shot if he was, like, if he was going to re-sign in Oakland, the biggest LOL in the possible world about Oakland spending money this offseason. But I just think that's such a high number. And also, like, the last few years have been a little different, but he's a guy who gets caught quite a bit, too. Like, 2018, mm-hmm. 33 stolen bases, 14 caught. 2016, 47 stolen bases, 12 caught. The year he stole 41 in 2013, 15 caught. So he's not an elite base runner. Like, he was super good this year. 47 for 52 is just outstanding work. Yeah, and 25 stolen bases in 56 games when he was with Oakland. It's still so funny. And every fantasy analyst was doing this, was like, is he going to get the chance to run in Oakland? Yeah, he got the chance to run in Oakland with a almost 80 stolen base.
Dare I say he ran with it?
Yeah. Hey, we can edit that part out. I just think that's too high of a number. I think 30 to 35 is something I'd feel much more comfortable in. Going over means you're talking about 40 to 45 stolen bases. It's just a little bit too much for me to ask for.
Now, see, I'm going to go over. And the reason why is because whoever signs Starling Marte this year is signing him so much for their speed that it only makes me feel like you don't sign Starling Marte if you don't want to run him into the ground to a certain extent. Like, you want him to be an absolute menace on the base paths to just run it. Like, sure, even if he ends up only converting, 80%, four out of every five of the stolen bases, it would not shock me if he got, essentially, if he's getting 80%, that means he has 50 stolen base attempts in the year.
Right.
With his ability to get on base like he has, and if you're signing him, you're probably signing him to a decent money contract that you're trying to put him out there every single day. You're trying to expand on him. I think he gets there. I think this is one of those where like this, he knows that this is his game and this is what separates him from everybody else. And I think he wants to run with that. So I'm going to go over. It'll be close, but I think he gets like 42, 43, still very close to the top, if not leading all major league players in stolen bases.
Yeah. And again, totally possible. But the other thing is, like you were talking about with on base stuff, this is not a guy who walks a lot. So you're going to need some batting average balls and play luck too. Like, you know, he had a 383 mark, but that's with a 310 average, only 43 walked, has never walked more than 43 times in a season. That would be my other concern, but he's also one of the fastest players in baseball and clearly is improving his jumps. He's going to be one of the most interesting signings to me too, just because that skill set ages the worst in baseball.
And that's what I was going to bring up.
So that's another thing. He's got to get him right now.
Whoever signs him, if you want to use the speed, you got to start using it now. You're not waiting until year three of that contract to start burning them. Like now is the time.
It's a good point. You're wrong, but it's a good point.
Yes. There you go. All right. Let's talk about a couple of these. Let's go rapid fire.
Sure.
Nick Castellanos, career high 34 home runs this year. However, he has never eclipsed the 30 home run mark before. Granted, he probably would have done so in the shortened 2020 season. Over under 29.5 home runs. I'm over.
I'm over as well, but it's going to be sad because every time Nick Castellanos homers, something really bad happens in the world.
Yeah, usually. Let's go Kyle Schwarber, the other outfielder, as we're just knocking outfielders out here, just had an unreal stretch. What was that, 14 home runs in 15 games or something like that that he had basically this year? He had a career-high 554 slugging percentage in 2021. The only other time he broke the 500 mark in slugging was in 2019 when he hit 531. A career slugging percentage of 493. So over under an even 500 slugging percentage for Kyle Schwarber entering next year. I'm under.
I'm over. I think his swing change has been pretty dramatic. Like, I don't think that he's a guy that's going to ever hit for even a decent average again, to be completely honest with you. Needed insane BABIP luck to get to the mark that he did this year. But I'll go over, and another one that's going to be a little bit park dependent too.
Yeah, and for me, it's under only because now, fortunately, theoretically, there's a universal DH out there. And like, he gets a couple more opportunities to not have to play the field. Yeah. But if that doesn't happen, then I think this number goes even lower.
Did he look bad at first base or what? Like, all due respect to him, that was a horrible decision to play.
Hey, first base is incredibly difficult to play. Remember that.
Thanks,
Ron Washington.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, it's just he's got so much swing and miss in that swing. And if he's not on, he's off. And if you were to take, and again, it's rude to do so, but if you were to take those 15 days out of his season this year, what a completely different, or even turn that into just like a good 5 home runs over a 2-week span, like that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But that'd be a third of what he got. Like that completely changes the slugging. So I say under. All right. And then let's end with two fun ones. Chris Taylor. Over under 2.5 positions eligible in fantasy for 2023. The jack of all trades is now going to be jumping to a new team. Does he maintain at least 3 positions entering 2023 drafts?
I honestly think he might hit that by May. Like, it's just the value of Chris Taylor is that you can play him everywhere. Another guy that it's going to depend on where he signs. I've heard a lot of talk about Seattle possibly bringing him back.
This is entirely where he signs. Yeah. Like, this one maybe more than all the rest.
Yeah, but if you're paying Chris Taylor, one of the reasons why you're paying Chris Taylor is he's a very solid offensive player. But if you're giving up a draft pick with him getting the qualifying offer, you're paying him for that versatility. I think he goes over.
All right, I agree he goes over there, but I find this interesting just as he, like, DJ LeMahieu's his way to somebody else and, like, where does he fall? And it's going to kind of depend on, like, the injuries that happen on the team and all the rest of the stuff. That'll be interesting, but because so much of his value, he's so valuable because of all of that positional flexibility that he adds.
Good point.
And then let's hit one fun. Anthony Rizzo, over under 24.5 hit by pitches in 2022. For those of you who want to know the math, he averages approximately 20 hit by pitches per season dating back to 2019. He's been hit over 20 times in each of the last 4 seasons, not including the shortened 2020 season. However, he already had 10 hit by pitches in 60 games. So he was well on his way there. The king of leaning into the pitch, Anthony Rizzo, over under 24.5 hit by pitches.
I'll go under just because I don't want him to get hit so much. Like I admire the on base skills and like he's not getting hit a bunch, but like stop it. You're gonna hurt yourself. Don't do it. I'll go under.
I mean, I'm gonna go over because you know what? That guy just has no problem, and I respect the heck out of it. Because I've stood in a batter's box and watched 70 miles an hour go past me too quickly and been like, nope, no thank you. So I can't imagine what 96 and speed or and spin does. But you know what? His batting stance gets a little bit closer to the plate every single year. It and does. He has no problem taking it on the elbow pad. So give me over. He just seems locked in. He seems like a magnet from just about any fastball high and inside. It's going to the elbow pad.
What a weird one to follow that would be. Just like you make your bet and you're like, did he get hit today? I wonder if Anthony Rizzo got plunked
nothing
in the
like, nothing like going to the box score and scrolling down like, did he get hit? Did he get hit? Did he get hit? Not did he get a hit? Like, no, did he get hit? Anything. That just sounds – where's that on a box score? Just hits, RBIs, home runs, and hit by pitches.
Yes.
If Anthony Rizzo's on the team, you have to do that.
True outcome player.
Exactly. Well, that just about finishes up our show for today. We're going to push our – because this ran a little long, we're going to push our pitching over-under to next week so that way we don't have to blitzkrieg through it. I enjoy doing this now. We'll add out a couple more pitchers next week and finish up the conversation then. If you like what you're hearing, please make sure you are subscribed to Circling the Bases wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to rate and review us. 5 stars, please. We love them. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Don't Lie, and you can follow Chris at Crawford_MILB. Tune back in on Friday morning for DJ and Drew as I host a brand new episode fresh for you as you wake up. So make sure you don't miss it. And obviously come back next week on Wednesday morning to hear the second half of this episode. So until next time, stay safe out there. And as always, thanks for the listening.
Over under on my love for Dom Smith is infinity.
Over.